Has anyone submitted any of these or organized any of these?
So I've got one that's almost complete for ISBRA,
right,
but had not thought about RSA and probably should. Do we have something, anybody, for basic science for RSA? Hearing no response.
Well, I know that Susan Smith is organizing one on nutrition, and so she asked me to be a part of that. Again, it's not specifically CFAS, but I think she was going to also ask Tina to be a part of that.
I see.
But that's the only one that I know of.
All right. Well, let's just see if there's something that we have that we could put together that would sort of cover the basic science side. I don't want to do the same thing as at ISBRA, but we could tilt it differently, maybe? Different crowd?
Would there be anything, for example, on that would mix the clinical with the basic science, like, for example, looking at the dysmorphology, the facial dysmorphology, or imaging?
Imaging certainly is an opportunity. I wonder how interested the general RSA membership would be in facial dysmorphology.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I'll ask the facial dysmorphologist when you present your stuff at RSA meetings as posters, what's the kind of response that you get?
Okay.
Fung on?
He's not.
I'm here.
But Kathy's here. I don't know if they're, you know, again, I'm just kind of tossing out ideas of whether there could be
Kathy, do you have
to do with imaging.
Pardon me?
I'm just wondering if there'd be something, again, kind of trying to blend the clinical with the basic science in terms of the imaging for symposium.
Well, I'd be happy to be involved for symposium. But another thing that's happened, and I guess I feel a little awkward at this point saying it because I don't know how public this is supposed to be, but I have been given the honor of doing the daily lecture this year, which will be the very first talk for the whole meeting, and so I definitely will present some of the imaging material for that. So I don't know how redundant it would be then to also do that for a symposium.
That's wonderful news, Kathy. Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm just really honored. Really honored.
And it is a bit of an issue because everybody, almost everybody will be there.
Yeah.
They'll have heard it. I don't know how much you probably don't know what you're going to present at this point. It's so far away.
Yeah, it's so far away. I haven't put it together. And but I, you know, I think the thing that they will be interested in is what we're doing with imaging. So I really don't want to leave it out.
Yeah. No, I agree.
Any other ideas?
You know, we could have a neuroscience focused one. We could get the you know, maybe Sarah and either Ed or somebody to do human imaging. Whether we want to do, where will we be with sheep by June?
Well, You know, the reason, one of the reasons I'm being quiet is because, you know, I really won't know what my results are for about another month. I'll have some results, and if they're interesting, I'll have wished that I'd have spoken up. But if they're not interesting, you know, I just don't know what I have right now. And I will. I'm going to try to have data crunched by the time of the deadline for the report.
So, is it December 4th for symposia? Something like that. But
yeah.
That sounds like it's cutting it very close.
Mm-hmm.
That puts you on the spot.
Mm-hmm.
Is Charlie on?
He's not on.
Okay. And
we did have someone join us.
Fong, I just got in. Sorry, I was late.
Hi, Fong.
Hi, Fong.
Just talking about the potential RSA symposia ideas.
Right, yeah, that's what we have it on the agenda.
One thought that I'd had, thinking about Fong's work as well, is something that, you know, we did last time with epigenetics and microRNAs. Then I had a microRNA symposium, and he had an epigenetics symposium. But something to, continuing with that, and maybe merging those two things.
We need to have four talks. Can we do the whole thing on epigenetics and microRNA?
I think so. It might be beyond just fetal alcohol.
Right. I mean, that would be a separate thing. The question is whether to, you know, to do a sort of molecules to humans kind of thing.
Right. That would be nice.
And, you know, have epigenetics and microRNA in there.
This would be a CFAS.
Right. I think it would be nice to have a CFAS focus.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in terms of individual topics, things that would merge, we could have some preclinical stuff, including epigenetics and microRNA. We're going to put something in for ISBRA. I don't know if that precludes doing something for this meeting, but we could have one other basic one. Kathy may or may not be able to fit. We could have, you know, human imaging. We could get Elizabeth to talk about something that relates from developmental abnormalities to what you can see in the brains, which is always helpful.
Well, do you think there might be enough new information from the neuroimaging core CFAS that three or four presentations might come together there that might somehow integrate those findings?
So I think for four presentations, it might not work. It may be too much for four to have it all focused on neuroimaging.
Or maybe a correlation of neuroimaging with behavioral outcomes where there's associations or new information on associations that could be presented?
If they have it. Already...
And this is the basic science, I know, but if you're looking for ideas.
I'll raise it on the Friday call. I mean, it's a thought, which is, you know, neuroimaging/behavior, which was one of the goals of this whole project. But sometimes, especially if pieces are pulled in other directions. So what we have is two big pieces, which is Jennifer's and Kathy's, will both be in different venues.
Mm-hmm.
So the question is, if we are taking the animal neuroimaging out, how to marry the human neuroimaging, and you could marry it with human behavior. And that would be an interesting symposium if we have enough. We can ask that on Friday. And the alternative is to have a sort of a sampling of CFAS from preclinical molecular studies that are important for development all the way to what you can see in a brain, which would be a way to get Elizabeth in, and we could have, you know, a microRNA, an Elizabeth cell kind of presentation, and then two things in between that bridge that.
It could be a given time, it could be a neurofacial imaging from the animal to the humans. And then if that can link with the brain imaging, this could be what we talk about, how to go from the phase diagnosis for the brain. These two components, maybe in time, can be a link.
But here's the question, Feng. Are we really going to be in a position by June to say something, or will we just be presenting the things that we've seen, you know, to be able to make that link?
Right. I think that's a very valid point. At this point, there will be, for example, the animal side, micro-CT, these bone has been now in the process of being segmented. And this may be linked with the human face, but the link between to the brain is still yet to verify. I think that would take a longer journey.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Because, certainly it's easier to do clinical imaging correlation with behavior in the brain. And it's not as much of a stretch, but we'll have to see on Friday whether they're looking at something like that. Something that takes us from molecules to development to human brains is another natural path, and we could do it differently than what we are proposing for ISBRA. Is a sort of an L1 molecular binding sites talk, and then Jennifer was going to do choline, and then Kathy was going to do her imaging, and I've invited a Polish investigator who does MRS as well as MRI in fetal alcohol, Dr. Urbanek, and he's tentatively interested, but I was supposed to hear back, I think, this coming week, whether he'll do that for sure. So that in a way, is a model that we could replicate with different presenters, this time making it exclusively CFAS. That one that I just described for ISBRA would be 3 of 4 being CFAS, and then we need a mandatory European presenter.
Any other thoughts on the RSA? I mean, I do like that idea, and it gives us more flexibility if we can put it together.
Yeah. Let me think about it a little bit, and others should as well. I think starting with an epigenetics, unless it takes away the possibility of a microRNA symposium, which would also be interesting, but we could plug some basic talk into there, and then have something that progresses through behavior to through human anatomy to behavior. But let's think about it, send some ideas, and then we'll bring this up again on the Friday call.
And if there's ever a need to have a call with some players from the basic science group and the clinical group, I can set that up at any time, so just let me know.
Great.
So I guess we kind of got the update on your symposium for ISBRA, Michael. When do you want us to send you abstracts? Do you want us to send those to you right away?
As soon as I hear from Urbanek.
Okay.
You can be thinking of your abstract, you know, send a couple hundred words. And
I didn't know what kind of time. I know that they were actually already accepting some symposium.
I think sooner is better. So maybe you should send a title and name and affiliation and all that with a couple hundred words, and I'll try to spin it together and send it off when I get Urbanek's.
Okay. Okay, so our next agenda item is to talk a little bit about the website. And just a reminder to email Jill if there's any contact information that's changed. A couple of other things, when we look at the publication list, we see that I'm not sure how frequently people are updating their lists. Again, there's a Google site so you can actually upload your publications, and then they get put on the list. But there haven't been any additions since August 1st. So I think Jill sent out a copy of what's on the website right now, and if you can take a look at that and make sure that any updates get added, please do that. Anything else on the website, Jill?
No, that's the main thing. I just know, I think I've heard some people say, this paper's ready, but I haven't seen any changes since August. So.
Okay. So, yeah, if you can just take a little bit of time and do that, then that gives our illustrates that there's progress being made. So, then just some loose end things. I guess the next agenda item is an update on the choline analysis, and we're kind of at the same point. I'm still waiting for some data on the tissue, and had talked to Carl. We are going to start producing some tissue with varying the dietary choline levels. Again, I had kind of held off to make sure that we could get the data from our first study, but he said to go ahead and generate those, so that's what we're going to do. But otherwise, we don't have any changes in terms of getting that choline data from the tissue.
So Jennifer,
you did those choline studies. Did you look at the livers grossly and histopathologically?
We saved liver tissue. We have brain tissue, blood, and liver. And the only data that we've gotten from them, and we didn't really analyze it. We basically removed it and froze it and sent it off to them. So we don't have any of the data from the liver or brain yet. We do have the plasma levels, but that's all that we have. And I think, again, we really need to see what's happening in terms of how much is getting into the tissue.
Well,
so they were working through their methods of how to measure that, and they were having some problems. That was why the tissue was taking longer than the plasma. They do have those methods all worked out, but we're still waiting.
I wanted to make a comment about we did some pilot work in some sheep, and after 30 days of the oral choline, the livers were a bit swollen, and we're just concerned about that. They appeared swollen. The histopath seemed to be fairly benign, but I just wanted to see if there was anyone else that had any comments on that.
Yeah, we've never really, again, we've taken it, and actually in the studies that we've done, we haven't been doing it with the choline supplementation. The livers that we have are just simply looking at ethanol's effects, prenatal ethanol's effects, and then this follow-up study was to manipulate dietary choline levels, so looking more at deficiency than supplementation. So we've never actually looked at that.
Was it the maternal or the fetal livers that were swollen?
This was some adult non-pregnant ewes that we just wished to establish that we got an appropriate response from the oral choline supplementation.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Is there anything in the literature about choline and liver disease?
There is such a thing as a toxic level, and what we did was we chose to use a dose that was at the highest recommended level for pregnant women, and so that's the dose that we gave, and so there are some things about toxicity in various species.
What do we know about the toxicity?
Well, in terms of, I'm not sure what dose you're giving. What dose did you decide on, Tim?
I don't have it in front of me. I'll have to look it up.
I mean, you can get, generally, at least in the humans, you have to get to pretty high levels, usually about over 3 grams a day, and typically you may see things like fishy body odor. There can be some effects on blood pressure and things like that. But again, those are levels that are much higher than certainly than what we're using, and certainly much higher than the level that is considered the adequate amount for pregnant women.
Yeah.
So I guess it would be good, Tim, for maybe us to talk about, I know we talked about the dose before and we were trying to match up, and I know that you have kind of some issues with the sheep and their digestion, and they're a little bit of a different creature in terms of
Well, the level, I believe that the level that you have used is on a per kilogram basis,
right,
higher than the ceiling of recommended doses for pregnant women. And so I was a little concerned about that. There's not that much literature on choline metabolism in sheep, and it appears that they have such a tiny nutritional requirement, because apparently they're able to acquire choline from other sources other than nutritional sources. And so, you know, it could be that the sheep handle choline a bit differently than the rats and the humans, but we're looking at it.
Right, and I'm not sure in terms of when you talk about the ceiling, because I know that the recommended levels for pregnant women are about 450 milligrams a day, and the supplementation that we're giving them clinically is 700. And when we originally talked about it to try to roughly estimate how much that is per kilogram, I think we estimated it was around 15 milligrams per kilogram, which with the rats, we've gone to that dose and still seen some beneficial effects, although we tend to use a higher one. Again, there, you always have those species differences in terms of what their baseline levels are, but I think it would probably be good for maybe you and I to talk about what dose you are using. Again, I can't address any of the issues of the sheep and how they might be different, but
yeah, let's do that.
But the when you say the ceiling effect, I'm not sure, because I know they have what is considered the adequate amount, and that would be 450 milligrams a day in pregnant women. So we may need to revisit that. And I don't know if it's possible for you to measure, you know, and don't know if we want to put more on Carl's plate, since we're not getting much. But
on our inquiries, so we are attempting to measure, assay it ourselves, and we're working on that.
Yeah, it's a little bit tricky, and I don't know if we need to maybe look for some other possibilities. I have a student who's actually working on some ideas and thinks he can measure it, but he's still kind of working through that.
Yeah, you know, it might be valuable just to measure liver enzymes in a few experiments.
Yeah, we did in these animals that I mentioned, and one of them did have an elevated bilirubin, but I think that the other more sensitive enzymes actually weren't different.
Right. I just did a quick literature search, and believe it or not, there is a Charles Lieber paper from 1985 called Choline Fails to Prevent Liver Fibrosis in Ethanol-Fed Baboons but Causes Toxicity.
Yeah, I've seen that, yep.
Yeah, it's usually seen as a protective factor.
Yeah, and occasional fat droplets with mitochondrial changes, moderate hepatotoxicity. This is in rats. I'm sorry, in baboons.
Yeah, I've seen that paper.
He's pretty
so
good.
These were just, these were, you gave it for 30 days?
Yes.
You said?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Why don't you email me? And I just would be curious to see what dose you did give them, and then maybe
and pull the paper. It's
hepatology.
E5. We'll see if it comes up. It looks like
volume five, page 561.
Yeah. I'll send it around if I can download the paper. Pull it now.
Yeah, but I thought they were trying to use it just purely for protective reasons. And this one, they're saying that there's toxicity.
Yeah. That was their intent, but life is so imperfect. I'll send this around. It's downloading.
Okay. Tim, is this a result of chronic use or is acute?
I'll show you. Hold on.
Yeah, the baboons was years, I believe. I think it was several years.
Yeah.
So it's 100 milligrams per 1,000 calories of choline.
So they probably got a couple hundred milligrams.
Yeah, it was 3 to 4 years.
Okay.
And then they had some increase to fivefold to 500 milligrams per 1,000 calories, which was similar to... So they're citing other studies that didn't come up on the search, but Steve Mazet was on some of them. Let me just send this around.
Okay.
I'll send it to Jill. Jill, if you could see that would be great.
No problem.
So you haven't started giving any pregnant news?
No, I think we're going to start next week.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, right now is when we really must start for this year. Most fecund part of the year, so we're going to make a final determination this week and start next week, start breeding and feeding.
Okay. Any other thoughts on that? Okay, then I guess the next question is just a follow-up, too, from our last conference call. Kathy, you were going to try and disseminate some of the information about the strain differences. Do we have any follow-up on that? You're going to initially talk with Scott putting in one of his publications?
Right. So Scott's working on writing that paper. And then I think the plan was once the paper is submitted, we'll work on a letter to the editor, or once we've got it ready and written, Michael and I will work on a letter to the editor bringing to the attention the differences in the strains in that one gene that's related to oxidative stress. So it's in progress, but I can't tell you any more than that.
Okay. I guess. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just saying we're expecting to get some fetuses pretty soon from Scott.
Right, you are. They took out the first litters of day nines and got a lot of animals. There are several more coming up. I was gone the week that they took them out and just got back this morning. I haven't had time to look at their stuff. So they'll be sending those to you soon.
Terrific.
And then the next, I don't know, Dale, if you have any information on the response for Kathy's.
Yeah, so this this stems from that great talk that Kathy gave when she received the Rosette Award at RSA at the FASD study group. And so I think Ed initially thought it would make a great NIAAA webinar. He was more familiar with them than I was, because I think he'd been approached by Fred Donadeo to do something on FASD for the webinar series. And the thought of Kathy doing one of those struck him as being a great thing. So, yeah, I don't know, Kathy, have you heard anything recently?
No, I haven't heard anything at all.
Okay, nothing at all. So what I can say is, you know, I brought this to Fred's attention, you know, some time ago, and it just kind of languished. And finally, he's been given the go-ahead to you know, look into this, and I think he had a chance to talk with Ed at our last council meeting, and after that, Fred dropped by and was very excited about moving forward with this. So, I'll touch bases with him again, and hopefully he'll be in touch with you soon to start getting this thing going.
Okay, I'll look forward to that. That'll be fun.
Okay.
So does she just give it to the camera, or do they have an audience, or how do they do that?
From what little Fred told me, evidently Kathy would come here at some convenient opportunity and sit down in front of a computer or something that where the recording would be done, would be made, that's as much as I know about the process.
Okay.
But I think it's done more in a controlled environment.
Yeah. Okay, can do.
All right, Charlie's not on here, but I guess that he sent a message to Jill saying that the special issue is going to be printed in January of 2010. So
I can read what he wrote. He just said that three accepted papers from CFASD for the alcohol special issue were the Farood paper, the Mattson paper, and the Aronson paper. There's one revision that's still under review, and that's the Zao paper. And unfortunately, the choline paper did not make it in. So that's the update that he said. He said right now it has 12 articles with the possibility of three more, which includes the Zao paper, depending on a review outcome within the next week.
Okay, so the next thing is just to talk about any progress. I kind of already told you about the choline, where we're at with that. Again, we're starting to generate some new animals for looking at the choline levels and metabolites in brain, liver, and blood with dietary levels being manipulated, and that's where we're at right now. Fong?
The micro-CT, we have collected not only for the high dose of the 4.8 volume concentration. Now we also have a low dose. The high dose images now that being done with the facial measurement that was sent to the alcohol journal. Now we going to analyze to the 3D, that is trying to first to segment these bones using computations, and because bone lineage are relatively clear, so we in the process now are able to segment each bone, like a frontal bone, the different places. So with that, we will next step will be analyze as a individual bones as well as the overall skull volume. So this is in the process of getting to the 3D. And this is what we have so far.
Okay. And Kathy?
I think probably the one thing I wanted to mention is that we're starting to prepare the mice for the abnormal faces from alcohol. So we've got a nice set that Peter Hammond has been working with us on normal faces. And so now we're generating the animals to do the abnormal faces. We're hoping that we can have some of that data by the time of the January meeting so that we can show everybody.
Okay, and Tim, I guess we heard a little bit about where you're at. Anything else to add? So how many ewes will you have, do you plan on generating this first round?
For choline?
Yeah.
For the choline study?
Yeah.
You mean? For the choline study? Is that what you mean?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, so we hope to, generate it 5 per group for the first year and then 5 per group the second year.
Okay. Does anybody have anything else that they wanted to talk about or add to the agenda?
I just have something briefly. This is Andy Aronson. So we focus on clinical data in our work in the informatics core, but I just wanted to give you a head up that we've been working with Elizabeth Sowell on what data she's going to add to the central repository from her brain imaging. And right now it's looking like she's got 116 different volume measures from one of the types of images, as well as the image itself that she's planning on having uploaded. I just think this is a good time, if there is anybody in the consortium who has a particular interest in getting access to any of her data, to touch base with her and let her know what you're interested in.
Okay. Anything else?
I'm at this meeting for the first time. This is Rajesh Miranda. Let me give a little bit of an update about what's happening. As Jill mentioned, we essentially had the contract come through last week. But what we've been doing in the meanwhile is we have samples, plasma samples from Tim Cudd, and we've been able to work through some technical issues of how to concentrate the samples without destroying them. We've managed to do that. We've started using some Exicon arrays to we've got 8 samples that we've done the first array batch on. This is looking for soluble microRNAs in plasma. And so 4 controls and 4 experimentals. I believe, Tim, correct me if I'm wrong, this is third trimester exposure, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So as we're speaking, we have the first set of data done and getting ready to upload to our database. And then we'll flip it around and repeat it again. What I'm hoping, though, is the arrays are relatively less sensitive, but they were cheaper before all the money came through. We'll do that now with PCR-based systems, which I think should give us a lot better results. That's where we are right now.
Thank you.
Rajesh, I'm just curious, how stable are microRNAs in the serum, or are they protected in some way?
Oh, this was very surprising. So a paper came out last year showing that they are actually very stable through repeated freeze-thaw cycles and such. So I think the idea coming through is that these are probably contained within some sort of vesicles or something like that. These are not naked microRNAs, but secreted as part of some sort of exosome.
Uh-huh.
But they are quite stable, and we can as part of our procedure, we're freeze-drying the samples down so that we can concentrate them enough to use them. And we're able to get quite good yields. From one sample of about 6 mils, we get about, I'd say, 700 to 800 nanograms of RNA.
So do you think they might be at the bottom of a high-speed centrifuge tube?
Yes. So that's the other thing we're thinking about is how to go about dealing with the exosomes. It requires some ultracentrifugation technology. Right now, we're approaching it by freeze-drying, and we're able to recover small RNAs that we can see use microarrays for. But that would be cool. There's a whole biology there that I think we need to exploit. My thought is that ultimately these are kind of endocrine-like molecules.
So you would actually potentially have some data for the symposium deadline.
I hope so. Well, remember, this is preliminary, and this is with arrays which are less sensitive.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So I'm not sure whether to shout about soluble microRNAs for the symposium. I'm sure by the symposium we'll have the data. But you mean for the December 4th deadline, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that might be pushing it.
Yeah.
I certainly would love to have the PCR data in hand first.
Right.
Rashi, what other tissue you have looked at it so far? Have you looked at the sheep tissues?
Well, this is sheep plasma that we've looked at. As I said, you know, we've been kind of using money from other sources to do this, so it's been relatively at a lower level. But now that the thing has come through, I would love to look at the leukocytes. I think we need to look at the leukocytes. But the, what I can tell you is the microRNAs that we see, every indication is that they're not lysis of cells, because we don't see typical small RNAs that we would see if we were looking at, say, leukocyte lysis. But we would love to look at leukocytes. We also would love to look at placenta. I have a feeling that that might be a big source of secreted microRNAs, even the trophoblasts are so active. What we're trying to do right now is we've got obtained some sheep trophoblast cells from Fuller Bezo, who's over in the Animal Sciences building, and we're working with those as well. But any thoughts, if you have any thoughts about alternate tissues, I would really appreciate that.
Have you looked at the embryo per se?
Not, let's see how to answer, not with sheep, but we're looking at the embryonic tissues with, like neural tissues with our mouse models.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that all of that would be a great, for the initial project, we wanted to focus on the plasma, but I think then we need to ask, where is it coming from? And so then looking at the embryo, embryonic tissues, placenta, those would be good.
Right. Because we have seen a very significant DNA methylation changes at embryo levels.
Right. And I should add that for the fetal neural cells, the loci that we're seeing that are coming up, the microRNA loci, they all seem to have, methylation-sensitive sites in there around them. So I'm thinking that methylation and microRNAs probably cooperate together quite heavily. Methylation may be an important regulatory mechanism that controls microRNA expression.
Yeah, that link is coming a little clear.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, we look forward to seeing your data in January then.
Yeah, me too.
Any other thoughts or issues to discuss?
Oh, one thing I would mention is that some of you now have a new program officer assigned to your grant, and that's Bill Dunty. Kathy knows Bill well because he trained under her. So hers is the one grant that he's not the program officer on. Bill is also planning to attend the meeting in January, so you'll all get a chance to meet him.
Mm.
But he's a great addition to our division.
Okay.
Is this true for the portfolio of basic science fetal alcohol grants? Or just the CFAS?
It extends to other grants in our portfolio, but what I was meaning to say is that he's taken over for Peter Gao as the program officer on all but Kathy's grant amongst the CFAS grants. And so, yeah, he's probably taken on some other grants, in our FASD portfolio. I'm sure of that, certainly not the whole portfolio. I still carry a good part of that myself.
Okay.
Okay, any other issues? So I guess everyone just needs to be thinking about the RSA symposium ideas, and I just look forward to seeing everyone in January. So thank you very much.
Thanks.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.